Please welcome in our new sponsor, Underdog Fantasy. Go to underdogfantasy.com and you'll discover that Underdog Fantasy is the best and easiest place to play fantasy sports. Underdog Fantasy lets you draft a fantasy dream team in minutes. Sign up now with the code POWERTRIP and you'll double your first deposit up to $100 in bonus cash when you make your first deposit of $10 or more. That's right, deposit $100 and get $100 for free. Underdog keeps it simple with their easy-to-use website and mobile apps. Pick between 2 and 5 players to fill out your pick'em slip, get every pick right, and take home some cold, hard cash. Use that promo code POWERTRIP and get your first deposit doubled up by $100 by Underdog. That's underdogfantasy.com. Use the promo code POWERTRIP today.
The upcoming presentation is a two-man power trip of wrestling podcast production.
And now for something completely different.
Hey, I'm a Hall of Famer. I'm in 3 Halls of Fame. For the young fans, they don't give a damn. They just give a damn about themselves and what they're hearing now. And I got no problem with those rules. I know the rules going in. I'm happy to play the game that way.
And when Ivan came off with that knee drop from the top rope and he pinned me, I thought that something happened. I couldn't hear a thing. You could have heard a pin drop in that arena. It touched me so deeply that when I went in the dressing room, I really felt depressed.
I'll tell you that, I'll tell you right to his face. And with Hogan and I, if he wanted to get in a real street fight with me, trust me, he would lose. And he knew it.
You know, that's the other thing. They give you the belt, and they're like, okay, you're in charge of me. I was like, what?
When you mentioned a guy like Harley Race, that kind of legendary status, it's obvious why people would get upset.
As far as I'm concerned, Roddy Piper was not a wrestler. He wasn't even a good worker. If he had to go out and work his way to the top and not have good friends like Jim Barnett. I mean, I'm not saying he's not a good guy. He's just not a tough guy.
Bro, I swear to you, I don't have an ego. Like, I don't give a crap. That stuff is not important to me. People don't know me. They have no idea of who I am. They know of me as being a fictional character that they saw on TV.
People didn't understand that, you know, the guy they saw in the ring that happened to be using his real name and happened to actually be the president of the company, they really believed that that guy that they loved to hate was actually a pretty decent guy. And I think many people have the perception that I really was that character.
Welcome to the two-man power trip of wrestling. I'm your host, JP John Paz. With me today, a very special guest. He is an author, of course, the author of Pro Wrestling's Black World Champions. He is Mr. David Shabazz. David, welcome to the two-man power trip. How you doing?
Hello, John. Thank you for having me on the show.
What is going on in your world? What are you up to?
Well, just working very hard in my day job. I'm a journalism professor, school has started back, so I'm a little busy getting things going with that. But and I moonlight as an author. My latest book is Pro Wrestling's Black World Champions, as you noted. And so that's sort of been keeping me busy these days. Just been out on tour promoting the book.
Got to show the book here. Obviously, Black World Champions. Great yes. Book here. So what it kind of spurred you to write the book? How did it start? Like, where's the genesis of the book?
Okay. It sort of starts as a sad story, and I hate for it to be that way. My brother, Julian, was the author of, he was really known as an author in black wrestling. He wrote The Black Stars of Professional Wrestling back in 1999. And so he was sort of seen as the authority of that. It was on his third edition. He passed in 2020. And I was going through his things, and I found this little pamphlet called Pro Wrestling Black World Champions. And it was a little small ebook like thing that I think he originally had it as like a downloadable PDF. And there was a printed version of it as well. And I found that printed version. I was like, wow, okay. this would be a good way to sort of further my brother's legacy. This is something that, you know, I could do for him to kind of, you know, pay tribute to him and sort of furthering his legacy. And that's really where it came from. So this is actually the second edition of that book. And because I'm expanding upon what he originally wrote, that's why his name comes first as the lead author.
Would you consider yourself a historian, or is he more the historian and you're, you know, you're kind of just following his footsteps?
He was more of the historian. He actually worked at a library. And so, wow. He loved books and archives and that kind of stuff. So yeah, I mean, he was really the historian. We both were just professional wrestling fans though. So it is very easy for me to pick up with what he was doing because I'm just as much a wrestling fan as he was. So it's not like I'm out of the loop totally with this. It's just that was my brother's thing in terms of publication. So he had that niche already filled.
Right.
So I'm just trying to further what he was doing.
But you both were huge fans. So you both love the business.
Definitely. Definitely. We grew up watching professional wrestling in our household. Mom, dad, even grandma used to watch it. So, I mean, we grew up watching it as kids.
Who was, like, your guy? Who was your favorite?
There were several. I would have to say Dusty Rhodes, Ernie Ladd, JYD, and Rufus Freight Train Jones. Those were my favorite wrestlers growing up.
Nice.
Pretty and good, Ric Flair, the Nature Boy. I couldn't forget him.
Of course. Everybody loves Flair. Pretty good group there. Pretty good group there, though. I like that. So you weren't really a WWF guy. You're more of a NWA Mid-South guy than a WWF guy.
Well, yeah, that's sort of ironic. I guess to give a little background, I grew up in South Carolina. I'm 53. So at the time when I was growing up, it was still, you know, pretty much during the time of the territories. And so Georgia Championship Wrestling was what I grew up watching, as well as Mid-Atlantic. And I know you know, but for the audience, Georgia Championship Wrestling, when Ted Turner took over that, Georgia Championship Wrestling was with the NWA. They used to put out a Saturday program called World Championship Wrestling. That was the wrestling show, the name of that show. And when Turner bought it, he just renamed it World Championship Wrestling. So, yeah, I was in that territory. So that's mostly what I watched. But I did see WWF. I mean, I think Hogan obviously was a major household name, so I clearly knew Hulk Hogan, but I knew Iron Sheik and several of those other guys as well.
What drew you to wrestling, though? As a fan, I know you said your parents watched, even grandparents, but what, like, kind of drew you to it?
I think I liked the athleticism as well as the storylines were really compelling. I'm really not that impressed with a lot of the wrestlers these days. I think a lot of the, and I hate to say that. I know it sounds like the older guy who's nostalgic and only likes his period. I don't mean to come across like that, but I mean, I think those guys knew how to sell. They could talk as well as perform. You could enjoy watching Dusty Rhodes on the microphone. I mean, you know, as well as watching him perform in the ring. And I think that's the big difference. All of the guys out there now, I don't think that they really have the microphone skills like the older generation used to have.
Do you watch a lot of current wrestling or not really?
I do. I don't watch it religiously because my job sort of takes up a lot of my time. I can't put in, I watch as much as I can, but I can't put in it's tough putting in 5 hours a week with WWF and 3 hours a week with AEW. But I do try to watch as much as I can. I actually caught some of the Royal Rumble pay-per-view Saturday night. So, I do try to watch as much as I can.
I know you love Dusty. What do you think about his son, Cody?
Cody has really impressed me lately. I think his heart is in the right place. I think he's really trying to be a lot like his dad, and I think that Cody understands the business and Dustin as well. I don't think Dustin really, you know, was able to get the credit that he deserved. And I understand he was immediately following up his father. So, of course, he went to Gold Dust to do something totally different, to not be compared to his father. I'm really impressed. I think Cody understands the business and he knows the business, and he's not just trying to be I don't think he's gotten where he has because of his father's name. I think he's put in the work on his own, and he's earned the level of respect that he's gained.
To me, I always thought Dustin was almost like undervalued just because I thought he was so good. Remember when he came in, he was the natural. Even then, I thought he was great. I was like, man, this guy's so good. But
yeah,
quite hard
I think
to follow Dusty.
It was just, I don't know. I don't know if the companies didn't really use him right. I don't know, but yeah, I agree. I think Dustin was really just underestimated, underutilized as well.
Cody going to be a main event WrestleMania guy. Obviously, he won the Royal Rumble. You saw that. He's going to be facing Roman Reigns. So, I mean, just a huge step up for him. But that's going to be, you know, that's going to be a huge, huge show. Big deal.
Yes, and I know it's a dream. A dream for Cody to even be in this match. I'd be happy for him if he wins. I kind of think the bloodline has a lot of momentum going on right now. Yeah. I don't know if he'll take it from Roman, but you're right. Definitely, just being on the big stage, WrestleMania, to compete for the championship. I think it's well deserved, and I'm really proud of Cody. Win, lose, or draw, I'm proud of him.
Do you like Roman Reigns? Do you like the Bloodline?
The Bloodline sort of grew on me. Roman, I really like the Usos. I'd probably like the Usos more than I like Roman. But he has sort of grown on me. I think his and it's just a personal thing for me. Roman's character just didn't really personally appeal to me that much. Though I know where he's going. I like the whole tribal chief thing. I know what he's trying to do, but it just doesn't personally appeal to me. I like the Usos. I think they're great performers. And I do think Roman is a good performer as well. I think the Usos happen to be they're the real draw for me, and certainly with the wise man Paul Heyman there. Paulie Dangerously obviously knows the business, and so he's one of those guys that's really going to help push them. And I think I'm going to be excited to see where it goes. I also heard the rumor that they're trying to bring The Rock back to fight Roman at some point.
Yeah, that is true. Roman was on Jimmy Fallon. He was talking about how The Rock couldn't get in shape. Not he couldn't get in shape, but that he's busy, but also to take the bumps to get into the cardio shape. He, you know, obviously he looks jacked. He said he's got great nutrition, but to get in cardio shape when you've been filming movies for, you know, for a few years, is like, he's mm-hmm. like, it's not that easy to do this. So that was kind of the reasoning, I guess, behind it, that The Rock may not be a part of it, but I know they were trying for it. He's a part of the family. So, you know, that'd be interesting to see who really is the head of the table. Is it Roman or The Rock?
True. And that would make for an excellent storyline. So I hope they're able to, bring that back and kind of sustain it for a while. I'm just afraid of, because of The Rock's schedule, that he won't be able to really commit much, maybe just making an appearance and here and there, but not really being able to stay with the promotion long.
He's got a TV show. He's got movies. He bought the XFL. The XFL is coming up. I mean, the guy, man, he's got his own tequila line. He's got his own clothing line. Man, to be him, he's got to have like 0 hours in his schedule for anything else.
Yeah, yeah, he's very busy, and I don't think he's going to have much time. But it would still be interesting to see him come in and challenge Roman for the head of the table.
I even saw Steve Austin was like training again. I was like, oh my god, is Austin coming back to face Roman? I was like, what is going on with Austin? He looks huge. He looks bigger than ever. I saw he was training on his Instagram page. He looks awesome.
Wow. Okay.
Were you a Steve Austin guy?
Haven't kept up with Stone Cold, but that would really be interesting if he's getting back in ring shape.
Wouldn't you? That would be amazing. Roman's got a lot of options, but it looks like they're going with Cody for now, which will be great, irregardless. So let's get back, if we could, let's get back
yes,
to
yes.
Speaking of The Rock, as we're talking about The Rock, he's featured in the book. Black World Champions. But just tell me a little bit just about like kind of the thought process that went into the book and kind of going through the champions as well.
Yes. The original publication had there were a total of 12 wrestlers in there, and 9 of them actually held the belt, and actually a couple more did win the belt later on. My brother had a section called the Champions with an asterisk, and he had Sailor Art Thomas, Mark Henry, and who did go on later on to win the belt, as well as Bobby Lashley. At that time in 2009, when he had published it, Mark Henry and Bobby Lashley had not won the World Heavyweight title yet. So, Or they had some version of it. I think Mark Henry had the ECW title, but ECW at that time was owned by WWF. So it was like, these are champions, but it's kind of with an asterisk because it wasn't really an independent promotion at the time. Mine has expanded it. It has 21 people. And so that's one of the reasons I thought it was a good idea to write this book, because I thought it had more substance to it now. A few more black wrestlers or wrestlers of African descent have won the title. And so I thought that would be a good addition and a good way to further my brother's legacy. That's not really cheating, if you will. You know, it's not like just putting out a different version. There was actually substance to put to this one because there were more black people who had won the belt. Interesting enough, in terms of the women, only Nyla Rose in AEW is the only other female who has won the belt. Since there are only 4, and that's Jacqueline Jazz, Awesome Kong.
Oh wow, okay. What do you think about that? What does that say? That they need to get more black women champions, you think?
Yeah, I would really like to see a lot more of the black females actually have a chance to win the singles heavyweight title. I know I was on talking to a couple of wrestling guys before, and you know, and they were talking about how the WWE, which you know is the big major company now, split their brands up, and so it's almost like they're considering, well, NXT is still not at that level yet, but like trying to consider SmackDown and Raw champions as like champions. I don't see it that way. I still see it as a champion of a brand and not the WWE champion. And in terms of the women, I know they at one time they experimented with something called the Divas Championship. Yeah. Yep. And I still want to see women. And all women have an opportunity to compete for a women's championship and not necessarily to be the Raw Women's Champion or the SmackDown Women's Champion. Let them be the WWE Women's Champion.
I feel like they should combine the belts and have champion versus champion and do it that way. Like Bianca Belair versus, I guess it could be Charlotte Flair, and then have Bianca Belair win the Women's World title instead of having two titles. I know I don't like the two titles.
I don't either. I mean, I guess it's more opportunity to have titles on people so they can say that they won a belt or something. It, but
yeah,
I don't really like it. I kind of like the old United States Championship or Intercontinental being a stepping stone to the champion. I get it. When they bought WCW, they had the big gold belt now, and so they had more belts, and the same with ECW as well. I guess I understand they had more room for growth and all, but I mean, if they're really gonna, I still think, I agree with you, I think there should be one universal champion, even for the ladies as well. And, you know, if you're gonna follow the NFL's model of having an AFC and an NFC and they compete for the Super Bowl, I mean, I think go ahead and follow it all the way. Just have a SmackDown champion or whatever, a Raw champion, and have them compete for the WWE Women's Championship and WWE Men's Championship.
It's funny, I was arguing with a buddy of mine before, you know, just going back and forth, texting him. He's like, oh, they should have a Raw champion, because Roman is the double champ now, obviously. He's the WWE Universal and Undisputed Champion. I said, oh, I love that, because it makes it more important that he's a champion. Whoever beats him, like a huge star, like Hogan back in the day. I mean, oh, Piper could have been champion, Jake the Snake. But it made that title seem more important that just Hogan was champion for, you know, 1,500 days, whatever it was. So when Roman holds it for 900 days, I don't know, it just makes the titles seem so much more important. And it's like, oh, well, we should have a world title on Raw. Well, I don't know, just because you have another show, you need, I don't like that. It's just like a waste. So they should do the same thing with the women and make it one world champion. I would like it much better. It would make it to me mean like it's more prestige for the women.
I agree. I think that's really what they need to do. And I'm so glad they did away with the Divas thing. I mean, they're professional wrestlers. I mean, yes, they may be beautiful, but it's not about that. It's about not about their looks, because for that matter, I mean, I'm sure some of the ladies like the men and think that they look good. I mean, but it's not a bodybuilding competition for the men either. It's professional wrestling, and that's what they need to stick with. And the women do deserve to have a world championship title as well.
When you look at it, so then I guess it would be Sasha, Naomi, and Bianca Belair, not technically counting as world champs because they're just Raw champs, or they were SmackDown champions. They weren't ever the world champs. So technically speaking, that's why they're not in the book.
Right. Absolutely. I do think Jade Cargill will have a shot in AEW. I think she's very green right now, and so they don't really want to put the belt on her, and certainly not to look like another Goldberg type of situation. But even though, I mean, she has that same momentum going with an undefeated record, but I think they kind of want her to want to groom her a little more before they put the title on her.
Man, she looks like $1 million. I could see her as champion, just like Goldberg. As soon as you saw this guy, you're like, whoa, who the hell is this guy? This guy's
got his ass. I mean, physical specimen. I mean, definitely you could see that. Wow, you know, she definitely is statuesque and looks like a champion.
When you look at Awesome Kong too, when she was champion, I mean, that was such a dominant run for her too. Such a great feud. She was a great champion at the time. I kind of wish she was still in the business. I know she did going into the acting world, but what do you think about Awesome Kong?
She was great. I mean, I know she had issues. You know, I know there were a lot of personal things that were going on that kind of impacted her. I know she was like pregnant and lost the, you know, pregnancy, and so I know a lot of a lot of emotional things sort of went on with her that kind of impacted her. So then, you know, it's the politics with the front office and all of those kinds of things. But I think she was a dominant champion, like you were saying. I definitely was impressed with her. And I wish she would come back. I was surprised to see
Nia Jax,
yes, come back at the Royal Rumble. But I was pleasantly surprised to see her come back.
Yeah, there was rumors that she was retiring. I was like, oh, that's interesting. Why are they throwing that out there? Is she, you know what I mean? Like almost like a smokescreen. She's retiring. And then all of a sudden she returned. I'm like, I guess she's not retired. That was
right.
And technically she's related to the bloodline. Who knows what's going to go on with that? Yeah.
That's true. That's so true. But yeah. And I just thought about her because she's similar to that dominance to Awesome Kong.
Oh, yeah, for sure. When you look at, you know, all these different black wrestlers going off to the men's side, shifting it to the gears of the men. When you look at like a guy like The Rock and he's a world champ, does he kind of supersede everybody else just because he was able to just, I don't know, like break barriers, be the king of Hollywood? Like he kind of went above and beyond almost like just being a wrestler. He almost transcended the business, which I know Vince probably hates, like a guy bigger than the business. But what do you think about The Rock?
Yeah, I mean, he's certainly one, I mean, that definitely transcended the business. He raised the bar. But that was totally, I think a lot of that had to do with his being brought up in the business. But there were a lot of people who were, you know, second, third generation wrestlers who were brought up in the business. But I think The Rock really paid attention and he used that to his benefit because it was like when he was, you know, came out, he didn't want to identify himself with his family. He was Flex Cavana. And Vince was like, no, you know, go ahead, be who you are. Combination of your dad and your grandfather, Rocky Maivia. And so that was this push for the third generation wrestler because the promotion wanted to push him. And that sort of backfired, so people didn't like him, and so then getting put in the Nation of Domination gave him a chance to be a heel, which played right along with people not liking him because they thought that, you know, he got an unfair push because of his bloodline. Yep. And so, but he used it. He used the microphone skills. Again, what I was alluding to earlier, that's the one thing that I don't think a lot of these wrestlers, current guys, have, that combination of in-ring performance skill, as well as the microphone skills.
Man, he could do it all, The Rock. And I remember I was at Survivor Series 96 when he made his debut, and I was like, wow. I was like, he looks great, but I don't know about this gimmick, Rocky Maivia. And he was all like smiles and, you know, being cheesy and stuff. Like, this isn't the 80s anymore. We're talking about 1996 here. So I don't know if this is going to work. And thank God he snapped out of it and did the Nation stuff, because, man, if he didn't, I don't know, maybe he would have quit the business. Who the hell knows? Hopefully, you know, that was never a thought. But, man, that's one of those things where it's like, wow, smart thinking on their point. Like, let's put him in the Nation. Just let him be.
Right. I mean, because you're absolutely right. I mean, it could have been, I'm assuming, the situation with David Flair, because I know he was sort of pushed the same way. And because he's Rick's son, everybody had astronomical aspirations for him. I mean, he couldn't live up to that. and I think that's what hurt him. Although Rick's other son, Reed, seemed to be, he seemed to embrace it probably a little too much. He was probably too young to follow in his dad's footsteps. And I think that's what didn't work for him. But I was glad to see Charlotte step in. And again, though, being a female, so she could copy her dad because she's a female. If it's a son, he gets no respect for doing that. But yep, because she's in a different league, if you will, she could do that and get away with it.
Yep. And it's almost like we saw David fail. So it's like you didn't kind of push on her as hard. Like, well, we kind of pushed David too hard. Let's not do the same thing with her. So, yeah, she's excellent. She's one of the best for sure.
Oh, definitely.
So when you look at just in general, like black world champions. Does for you in your era, like who's like the first guy you think of for black world champions? I know for me, I always think because of my age, I'm 40. Ron Simmons is the first guy I always think of. Like Ron Simmons was the first WWE black champion. So what about you?
I'm really, really proud of Ron and really happy for him. He was certainly one of those guys that I grew up watching. And I remember when he won the belt, it was a great night, a great event. I mean, you know, all of the people from the baby faces, at least from backstage, came out in the ring and picked him up. And, you know, it was you could tell that that was a great moment. And I've always enjoyed watching Ron and his partner Butch Reed when they were Doom. I really enjoyed those guys.
Yep.
But for me, I really tend to think of Ernie Ladd, Thunderbolt Patterson, Freight Train Jones. Those are the guys who I really think about because, and maybe being a writer, a guy who uses words and that kind of thing, I guess that gift of the gab really makes a difference to me. Those guys they had those microphone skills too, and that's really what I think makes them complete.
Ernie Ladd, what a monster he was, and a great football player too. When you look back at the Big Cat,
absolutely. but I must give the more I think about it, would Ron Simmons something that just being himself, while it wasn't a great mic skill type of thing, but his damn slogan just sort of picked up and just natural things like that. When you let those natural things come out, I think that makes a difference to having that signature statement. So now I kind of like him a lot more now because of, you know, his APA days and that damn slogan coming out. I hope I could say that on the show.
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah. It is funny, like if you look at it, because he's basically just kind of being himself the way he is backstage, like jovial and kind of joking around, like, damn, you know.
Right.
It's just funny to think. It's like, well, he could have just been Ron Simmons the whole time. Because remember at first they had him as Farouk in that weird gladiator outfit?
Right. I mean, I don't understand that. I mean, they should have just let him be himself. There was no need to try to make him Farouk and all of this kind of stuff and then try to make it stick. But, you know, Ron, my brother and I used to talk about this. It seems like Vince McMahon has a problem with any so-called superstar that he didn't make. Because Simmons was a champion in WCW, you're not going to be my heavyweight champion. You know, no matter how great you are, because I did not make you and I can't put my stamp on you. You know, Vince seems like he wants control over everything. And anybody who didn't really come up through his organization, it seems like they don't get the same kind of push.
That is so true. I always thought that. It's like, man, if he didn't make it, he's not going to necessarily break it, but he's not going to give you like this huge push. It's just not going to happen.
Right.
Unfortunate, but it is true. Even Flair, I know he won the 92 Rumble, but he didn't do anything with him. I know he ends up winning the belt again, but he didn't really do anything with him. Didn't give him like this big push. Didn't make it seem like he was like this big star. Hell, he's world champion at WrestleMania 8. He doesn't even main event.
Right. I mean, Vince, yeah, he's totally underutilized Flair, and he was obviously going to let him have the belt because Ric Flair is Ric Flair.
Yeah, of course.
But he's not going to keep it long and not, you know, really going to give him that push and give him the chance to extend his, because he could have been a 20-time champion if Vince would have really allowed Flair to be himself and shine in that WWF at the time.
And Ron Simmons, to go back to him, when he beats Vader for the title, what a moment. There's a kid in the crowd that, it's funny when you go back and watch, he literally is almost like he's got springs in his shoes, like jumps out of his chair. And like, you can almost like, oh my God, the kid's going to jump through the roof like that. He was so shocked that Simmons won the title, but what a great call by JR too. I mean, what a moment. That was so great because it's such a big upset because Vader was like the dominant guy of WCW of that era for a couple of years there.
Yeah, yeah. I was shocked because I knew Ron had the ability to win, but I was just shocked that he actually did. And I wonder if that was one of those situations where the ending was actually scripted, or if it was kind of given to Vader to make the call. I mean, does if he impresses you enough, will you do the job for him or not based on the way he handles himself? I kind of, not to take anything away from Simmons, but I just wonder if that was what they had planned or if Vader kind of just made the call, you know, that night in the ring.
And what a moment, though, as far as like WCW, because the year before when he was shooting at Luger at Halloween Havoc stuff, I actually thought, I was like, okay, maybe Ron Simmons would win the title then. Then when he doesn't, I was like, oh, he's not beating Vader for, you know, a year later or whatever, months later. So it was a shocker, big time shocker.
Yeah, yeah. It totally surprised me. I think I was just kind of thinking that, okay, well, that's. Even at that time, I guess probably even in the back of my mind, I was thinking there's no way this black guy's going to win the belt. Because, you know, it's just been so few and far between. I just didn't really think about it. And not like it was going to stop me from watching wrestling or anything, because I'm a fan. I just really didn't expect it to happen. And when it did, it was like, wow, it was a great shock. Because, like you said before, he did have opportunities and didn't win the belt. I was like, okay, well, yeah, it's going to do like other people and give him a shot, but not really let him win the belt. And when he did, it was like, wow, that was a wonderful moment.
Who do you consider champions before him as far as black champions? Bearcat Wright, Bobo Brazil, or who would you consider?
Yes, those two. Bearcat Wright and Bobo Brazil. Yes. Well, and Ernie Ladd as well. And I have to give credit to Sailor Art Thomas as well. Those guys, they won the WWA, and it was fractured at that time. That's the only controversial thing. It was, you know, it split into two groups, so it was a question of, you know, it wasn't really who's the real champion kind of thing. But you can't deny the fact that they won the belt from. You know, it's sort of like football, like college football. I mean, you can only compete against the teams that are in your conference. You can't blame a school. They can, you know, it's not their fault. They can only compete against the guys in their conference. So
yeah,
just because the league was split at that time, it's not fair to nullify the fact that they won versions of the belt. I think the only thing that hurt Ernie Ladd is because he was a heel, it's just more advantageous to for him to put over a baby face than to be the champion for a long time. So I guess that's still sort of the case, but then again, I don't know. I guess the bloodline, Roman is technically a heel. So I guess these days it's changed a little bit in the heels.
He's one of the very more. Yeah, he's one of the very few heels that have been champion for such a long time. Because if you look at like guys that were champions for a long time, let's even go back, like Lou Fez, babyface, Bruno Sammartino, babyface, Bob Backlund, mm-hmm. babyface, Hulk Hogan, babyface, Pedro Morales, babyface. I mean, those are like long running champions. Dory Funk Jr. I mean, usually it's babyfaces.
Right, right. You don't find a heel to for lack of a better word, reign as long as Roman has held the title. But yeah, it's actually pretty interesting.
And it depends on where they are. Sometimes he gets a lot of cheers, but he obviously is a heel the way he acts. But sometimes he's more popular in some places than others, for sure. But he is definitely a heel. So interesting business strategy, which is not hurting them at all because they're obviously making more than ever.
Right, right. I mean, the bloodline really seems to be popular, obviously popular enough to even bring Solo over, and he's still a little green, I think, but when you get the call to come up to the big leagues, I mean, you have to accept it. I mean, I don't blame him. But yeah,
apparently there's more. There's more not coming into the bloodline, but there's more family members. Solo has and the Usos have a younger brother too that is going to be a wrestler.
Okay.
And then God knows all their cousins and stuff. Forget about it. If you start going through all the cousins, it's nuts. The Hawaii clan there is crazy.
That's true.
When you look at, though, like guys like Sailor War Thomas and Ernie Ladd and Bearcat Wright, do you think that racism was like huge in wrestling back then, or not so much in wrestling? Because to me, it always seems like, I don't know, wrestling, it's one of the weirdest quote unquote sports, I guess you could call it sport, because baseball obviously had a divide for a while, but did wrestling really ever have a divide like that? Because it doesn't seem like it, but maybe I'm wrong.
Well, I think the biggest complaint certainly during Bearcat Wright's era was that there was still discrimination among the matches. Just wanted blacks to wrestle each other and didn't want to really integrate, and that was part of his big fight. And I think that's one of the things that actually hurt him. I mean, it was, you know, that it's like the person who makes the stand, they have to suffer, but they kind of make it better for Ron Simmons to eventually.
Yeah, the generations to follow. Yeah. So did he have to deal with a lot of like racism and discrimination from the fans or from the wrestlers, or like who was it like the worst towards?
I think it was just with the organization themselves, just kind of trying to, you know, a lot of the promoters in from my point of view, I don't think that they really believe that the black wrestler would be over with the fans. I think it was just that same sort of mentality. So like in football, like a quarterback, like the black guys can't play quarterback. They're athletes. And so let's let them run the ball and catch the ball because they're athletic, but not make them the field general, the guy who's thinking and calling the shots. And you hear that a lot, even with the commentary. And you can hear that a lot in wrestling these days. If you watch those matches and listen to the commentary, a white guy does something, that was a smart move. The black guy overpowered him. Still, they still do it today. Why can't the black guy make a smart move?
Right. Right.
And if you listen to that commentary, you could listen to Raw tonight and hear that. The same thing. That's just I don't know if those commentators are conscious of what they're saying, but that fuse, that stigma, that makes them think that the black person is not going to be a champion that's well embraced with the crowd, and that means you're not really paying attention to the kind of pop that they get from the audiences and the love that they get from them. Maybe not as much as, you know, somebody like a Stone Cold, but in terms of being able to, you know, and it's really the marketing machine really behind a person. That's with any part of the entertainment business. You know, I'm, you know, most people, there's songs that you hear on the radio that you probably don't like the song. Why is this song being played over and over and over again? Because their company has put so much money into the payola to make this person a star. And if you like them enough and trust them enough, if you invest into them, you can make people like them, the sort of the way I feel about John Cena. I think John Cena was kind of thrown down our throats and made us like him. I know there are probably a lot of people who like John Cena. So for Cena fans, I'm sorry. I just think that he was thrust down our throats. The marketing machine was behind him enough to make him a star. And I think that they could do that with the black wrestlers as well. That's my point.
With Cena, though, and I know people that love him, but you have to listen to the crowd. Half of the crowd hated him. Half the crowd cheered him because half the crowd was like, enough, Super Cena, like pushing him down our throat, like enough with Cena. So that is so true about him. It's like they were almost like, oh, you know, you're going to like him no matter what. He's spoon feeding him. It's like too much. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
When you look at it, is there a guy that you think should have been pushed, a black wrestler that wasn't, or maybe could have gone further than he did? I always think like a guy like Booker T, who, you know, multiple time world champion, I always wanted him, like he lost to Triple H WrestleMania 19. Like he should have beat him there and kind of been like a little bit of the face of the company for a little bit. You know, maybe you want to go in a direction that they're going to bring in Goldberg or whoever eventually, or who, you know, whoever they want to go with next. But I always felt like he should have won that and they could have done more with him. And then when he was King Booker, I was like, oh, my God, it's the most entertaining guy on the show by far on both shows. So I was like, I give him the world. Like, give him, he was always the guy to me. I was like, man, even though he had an awesome career, two-time Hall of Famer, everything else, I always felt like he even should have been pushed more. But who's the guy you think of?
I totally agree. Booker T, definitely. But, you know, again, that goes back to the fact that Booker T, Vince was not going to push him because Booker T – and Stevie Ray, the most celebrated tag team in WCW, and Booker T being a five-time WCW heavyweight champion, Vince McMahon was not going to push him because he was already well-established before coming to WWE. But you're absolutely right. I mean, Booker T, and that's spoke to Stevie Ray a couple of months ago, and Stevie Ray, as you know, never went to WWE, and Stevie said the reason, you know, he didn't really talk about it much, but he said it, the reason he never went over was because he was afraid that McMahon would destroy Harlem Heat, that he would turn him into a gimmick, into a joke, into something other than the badasses that their image was supposed to be. And that's why he said he never went to WWE.
And it's funny, Sting, back, you know, in 2001, 2002, could have went there. He said in an interview, I know he eventually goes there in 2014, like 12 years later, he's pretty old at that point. But in an interview, he said, I saw the way they treated Booker T when he first got there. And I'm like, nope, I'm not going there. I don't like it. Because The Rock said, who in the blue hell are you? Instead of saying, you're the WCW champion, you know, and really pumping him up, he kind of ripped him at first. Sting was like, oh, man, I didn't like the way they talked to Booker T. I'm not going there.
Yeah, I mean, it was just, yeah. I remember that. And certainly, yeah, Sting was thinking the same thing. I mean, you're going to destroy my legacy, you know, and people know me and know who I am. And Sting has, yeah, I mean, I was really disappointed when he actually went to WWF or E, whatever it was at the time, because I wanted Sting to stick to his guns and not go there. But I understand. I mean, you're a wrestler, and that's sometimes they make you an offer you can't refuse.
Yeah, I've heard he got paid a pretty pretty hefty amount to go there, even over for a short period of time. Heard it was a pretty hefty amount. He only, I think, wrestled what, four matches or less, so pretty right. Pretty good. I know he got a DVD, he got the Hall of Fame, so I'm sure he's not you know, not kicking himself about it. I'm sure he's okay with it.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way with Goldberg too. I don't think Goldberg really wanted to go for the same reason. He, you know, such a dominant champion, WCW. He knows that Vince is not going to let him be a dominant champion the same way in his federation. So, but yeah, I mean, if he pays you well to do a few matches and okay, great.
Yep. What about current guys that were champions, or you know, more current guys, I guess you could say, that were champions? Kofi Kingston was the champion for a little bit. Big E was the champion. Guy that I love, and he's getting a huge push now because he's about to face Brock Lesnar again, Bobby Lashley. What do you think about those guys as world champions?
I'm really disappointed with Kofi and Big E. I think that they were given the best, not them personally. I'm disappointed in the way the company misused them.
Booked them, yeah.
Big E certainly has the more of the stature, I guess, for what they were looking for, the build and the charisma. He and Kofi both had the charisma with New Day. And I think that's what kind of turned the tide. But for Kofi's reign was unceremonious and just really not really a memorable reign. I think they just sort of gave him the belt because he was popular at the time. And that to me is a disservice. Recognizing that, you know, there haven't been that many black champions. So here's a popular guy. So let's just give him the belt. Don't do that. If you're not really going to push him, you're not going to invest in him. If you don't think he really deserves it, because if you're not going to push him and invest in him, you really don't think he deserves it. So if you don't think he deserves it, then don't give him the belt, because I don't think a world heavyweight, I never see any of the white world heavyweight champions go down to mid card. They stay in the main event. They may not wrestle as much, but you know, Brock Lesnar's always in a main event. He's in a major match. He's not going to be a mid-carder. And, a New Day now back over in NXT and you got him back in attack. Come on. And this guy was a champion. People wouldn't know that if they didn't have the history. Bobby Lashley, I think certainly Bobby has all of the skills to be a great champion, and I wish they would let him get back to that level. I understand that they're trying to make the United States Championship a significant championship, as well as, I guess, the Universal at one time supposed to be. I think one was supposed to be Raw and the other one was supposed to be SmackDown champion. And Bobby, well, wait a minute. The WWE, maybe it was the WWE and the
Intercontinental in the U.S.
and the Intercontinental or something. Yeah, they're trying to elevate those two belts to make them a little more significant.
Yep.
But that's still not the recognized world heavyweight champion. There's still a WWE championship, and there's still a Universal championship. And I guess, or like we were saying earlier, there are too many belts.
Yep.
So can Roman go out and only defend one? Can he lose one of the belts and still have the other one? I mean,
I don't know, because on Raw it was weird. The Usos faced the Judgment Day, but it was only the Raw tag titles were on the line. I noticed that. I'm like, that's weird. So they would have been losing one, but they were still SmackDown. Thank God they won, but it was just weird the way that happened.
Right, and I think they probably have it set up that way just to kind of create additional storylines and to have the belts fragmented, sort of like, I guess, like boxing was at one point, and just have so you can eventually have a champion versus champion unification. I guess that's the idea.
When you look at it, though, Lashley, I think Lesnar, that'll be a big match. He'll win, I think, hopefully. Anyway, Lashley will win that. Kind of hope maybe Reigns will lose to Cody. I don't know, but I always kind of like Reigns versus Lashley, a big SummerSlam main event or a big main event. Just, I don't know, Lashley deserves that spot to me, and he looks like $1 million, obviously.
Oh, definitely. I just somehow just from. I think they've been using Bobby Lashley to just sort of put other guys over lately. I'd love to see him beat Roman for the belt. I think he deserves it. It just seemed like they've just been using him to sort of elevate other people.
He eliminated Lesnar from the Royal Rumble. That was pretty impressive. That was pretty good.
That's true. And clearly I think Brock is just trying to, you know, do his part and just kind of put the other guys and put them over.
He's got a big paycheck, I've heard. So yeah, I'm sure he doesn't mind. Like, oh, you want to put over Bobby? Yeah, put him over. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Right. Because he's still, Yeah, and you know, and you know, Brock still is a great performer, and so he does it in an entertaining way, and kind of he really puts them over. He makes the guys earn it, and I like that.
And even the last time when they wrestled in Saudi Arabia, when Brock beat Bobby, Bobby should have won. I mean, it was almost like, wow, what a fluke. Lesnar won? Like, what? He luckily won. Then he got his ass kicked after the match. But, yeah, right. I know. It's like, I've been liking what they're doing here. It's like, wow, they're actually making, like, Brock almost seem like slightly an underdog, which is never the case with Brock.
No. I was really shocked by that one. I didn't expect Brock to win that match, but. Hey, I guess that was to feed into the storyline for a future match.
Yep. Oh yeah. The third match will be Mania for sure. Yeah. Between those two. So as we wind it down, we head towards the finish here. What was your favorite part about writing the book? What's your favorite experience writing the book?
You know, writing it was therapeutic for me. But it gave me a chance to learn a lot and to get more in contact with the wrestlers themselves. There was a lot that I didn't know about a lot of them, you know, the real names and where they were from and sort of a lot of their backgrounds. A lot of them I didn't know. I mean, the big guys like Ernie Ladd, of course, you know, he played pro football and
yep.
Even Ron Simmons played in college, standout guy at Florida State, you know, learning those kinds of things about those guys. That was probably the best part for me. It gave me a chance to really kind of understand them a little more and have that a better appreciation for them myself, which makes it a lot easier for me to write the book and to talk about it, because like, wow, yeah, I really have a great appreciation for them, so I can talk about them a lot better than it just being well, this is just something I'm carrying on to for my brother. It's I learned a lot, and having been a fan to begin with, to go from being fan to actually understanding a lot about the people themselves, those performers. That's probably the best part for me.
When you look at the book, good feedback, like good experience, everything is positive about the book?
Yes. All of the feedback I've received has been really positive. And I think that's a tribute to my brother, the way he always wrote his books and his interviews. And everybody, you know, they would always talk about racism and how some of the Flairs and the Dusty Rhodes and some of those other guys could imitate the black guy and they could become popular doing that, but the black guy couldn't become popular being himself. And so it wasn't, you know. My brother's position always was that this book was written out of love and appreciation. It wasn't written to insult anybody or to talk about racism. Yes, that's a part of it. But he wrote the book when after JYD died, being the historian and archivist that he is. You know, he was looking for information about him and barely found anything. You know, there's nothing out there. And he's like, wow, you know, these people that we grow up watching and idolizing, they live and die. And it's like nobody says anything about them. And certainly at that time, because professional wrestling still, you know, sort of carried that stigma, I guess, of being lowbrow and not really, you know, talked about a lot. You know, people know about it, but it's something that they didn't publicly say. You know, you see, now everybody knows all of the wrestlers, but you know, you start talking about them, yeah, oh yeah, everybody knows who you're talking about, but they don't say it publicly. And so that's really where it came from. His idea was to celebrate those African-American wrestlers who competed, and my book the same way, furthering his ideology of just trying to point out who these people are since it's been very few to actually hold the championship. And I think that's what really makes it significant, because you think about wrestling in America from the 1800s still, it's only been 21 black people to hold the title, and only four have been women. So
pretty crazy. Yes. Maybe not enough, for, like you're saying, very, very low amount if you look at the history of the business. But tell everybody where you can get the book, Pro Wrestling's Black World Champions.
Yes, you can find this book at any of your local bookstores, certainly the Barnes & Nobles. They all have it. If they don't have it in stock, they can order it, or you can order it online from Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, all of the major outlets, because it has the it's available worldwide, carried through the major distributors, so all of the bookstores can have it.
Now, as far as you, do you have social media, stuff like that? Would you like people to reach out, or, you know, maybe gain some social media following, or no?
Yes, that's something that I'm really in the process of building up myself. But in general, Twitter at David L. Shabazz. My Instagram is the same way, at David L. Shabazz. My Facebook, I believe, is just David Shabazz. And do have to be careful. I don't know if I put the L in that one, because there are actually a couple of people out there with the same name. Wow. So, yeah, I usually try to put the L in mine to make the difference, so that everybody would know that's me. But yes, I'm on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. The YouTube page, I'm trying to build it up as well.
All right. Awesome. David, everybody check out Pro Wrestling's Black World Champions. Thank you so much for all the time today. Really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, John.
This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron, and also check out the website TMPTEmpire.com and buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies, brother.